Welcome, everyone. We had a big treat this morning, or at least it was for me, and I think everybody who was in the adult class, to be joined by Steve Lotspeech from Paris, from France, right? I was very surprised and pleasantly surprised to see you, Steve. So, you know, if Steve can make it from France, you can join in from everywhere. So class was really great this morning. Again, looking at the things of the Word of God in some ways that we've never looked at it before. And you know, that may happen for some of you today here in the sermon. We're going to talk about a very, very popular person in the Scriptures whose name is Jesus. We're going to talk about him. And we're also going to talk about one that's not so well-known or popular named Manasseh. So that's coming up, but we're in a series about Grace 2020. And we're talking about grace and what does God's grace offer? Well, for sure, forgiveness. And that's the thing that we most of the time associate with grace. As a matter of fact, some people would think they're almost synonymous. But really, God's grace includes forgiveness, but it's bigger. And there's more, and we're going to talk about that today. We're talking about what grace offers for everyone in the room and for everyone out of the room. Grace, God's grace is offered to all. And then how do I receive it? How do I receive this gift that God is offering me? And so today's sermon, the title of it is God's Grace Restores. And if you guys who are not here in the building, you're listening online, you hear some stuff in the background, that's cool because we love kids. We love kids. And we count them as full adults, you know. So when we're taking how many people showed up, we're counting them as full members, not half members, full members. So we're happy that they're here. And honestly, don't bother me. So if it don't bother me, don't bother you. Let's go. Love those kids. So we're going to be talking about the idea that God's grace restores. God's grace restores. And there's a couple other big ideas going to lead up to that. But I'm going to start off with just reading the definition of restore, the verb restore. It's to return. It's to return someone or something to a former condition, place, or position. So it's to return something or someone to their former condition, place, or position. So, for instance, art that gets restored. If something's wrong with it, it's been, you know, time has taken its toll on a piece of art, and it doesn't look the way it did at the beginning. So it's restored means it looks like it always did. It looked like it was meant to look. Sometimes it's like a position or a job, and we'll talk about that later today. The idea that I lost some of my responsibilities, some of my authority in my job, but now I'm restored to that and I get it all back, okay? Well, we'll get to that more in a minute. Several times in my notes I have read the orange card, and that's the definition of, you know, so orange card, I'm going to read the definition of restore. It means to return something or someone to its former condition, place, or position. And so today we're going to talk about this in these ways. We're going to talk about two stories. I'm going to tell two stories from the Bible, one well-known, one not so much. I'm going to talk about the phrase, he humbled himself. He humbled himself. And then I'm going to talk about a psalm. Now, the first story is going to be the story of Manasseh. He was a king. He was the worst king Judah ever had. And they had some bad ones. They also had some good ones. Now, the northern kingdom, we call it usually Israel, they had all bad kings. All of their kings. They had no good kings. All of them were bad. And some of them were as bad as Manasseh. But Manasseh was by far, he's the worst in the kings of Judah. And he was famous for it. It mentions him in other parts of the Bible. And we're going to talk about Manasseh from 2 Chronicles. His story is also in 2 Kings. Manasseh, worst king Judah ever had. Let's just hammer that home for a second. I'm going to say Manasseh, and you're going to read this, the worst king Judah ever had. Manasseh.
The worst king Judah ever had.
Yeah, he was horrible. And I'm going to tell you just how horrible he was. Now, he's the son of Hezekiah. And the irony there is Hezekiah is one of the best kings Judah ever had. And he's the grandfather of Josiah, who is another one of the best kings Judah ever had. Top three, David, Hezekiah, Josiah. And Manasseh was stuck right in between there. And he took over kingship when he was a kid, and that's probably part of the deal. He got power way too soon. He was in power starting, you know, when he was like 12 years old. And who knows, you know, kids these days, right? Kids those days too. By the way, I cannot help but say welcome to Pam, who just walked in the room, and everything got a little bit better right there. I know. She's like, kudos, right? Okay. So here's the deal with this guy. So he's the king of Judah. By the way, he was king longer than anyone else ever. He was longer than anyone else. But it took him a long time to do the bad things he did. So Hezekiah had done so many great things and had restored the nation to what it was really supposed to be in many ways. He had gotten rid of much of the idol worship, even though the people still hung on to some of their old ways. They still hung on to some of their old idols. We talked about that last week. Well, I'm just going to read a list here of different things he did, and this is in 2 Chronicles 33. But he rebuilt the high places his father Hezekiah had torn down. High places were mounds where they would usually have idols on them and people would go to worship. And so he rebuilt the high places that Hezekiah had torn down. Number two, he erected altars to Baal and Asherah, and he also made Asherah poles. Asherah was a female goddess. Baal was the male version of her, and they kind of, in the worship time, they had sexual kind of things going on. We're not talking about details of that, but it was bad. And he built them on the high places so that people would go worship Baal and Asherah here on the high places to these altars. He also bowed down to the stars and worshiped them. What is that called? Astrology, right? Yeah, he was deep into that. And then he also built foreign altars in the temple. So he would find altars from other nations worshiping other gods, and he built them in the temple of God. Okay, so he also, this is the worst to me, this is the second worst thing. I'll get to the worst last, but he sacrificed his own children in the fire in the valley of Ben-Hinnom. Some of the gods in Canaan practiced child sacrifice. He did also. He burned two sons on an altar. Okay, I'm going to say the word, and you're going to say, I'm going to say the name, you're going to say it after. Manasseh? Yeah, ever. He practiced divination and witchcraft. He sought omens with mediums and also with spiritists. He took the image that he had made. He made a god to Baal. He made one himself. Carved it himself, it says. He carved it himself, and he put it in the temple where the altar to Yahweh was. He took the one that Moses had been instructed to build and took it out of the temple and put an idol that he had made there. And finally, not only did he do these things himself, it says, he led Judah and the people of Jerusalem astray so that they did these things also. It says they did more evil than the nations the Lord had driven out of Canaan. Woo! Leadership counts. And he had done all these things. And so here's what happened. Why did he think this was okay? Why? Because he had this attitude. I call it, I'm going to put it in the terms of today. He had I can do this because I can attitude. People ask you, why are you doing that? Because I can. You know, well, what do you mean? Because you can't. It's wrong, though. It's wrong. But he thought he was God. He was called the king, but there was another king that he didn't recognize, and that was Yahweh. We'll get to that in just a second. So here's what happened to him. God warned him several times, but then God sent the Assyrians. And the Assyrians came, and they didn't destroy Jerusalem, but they did cause some havoc. But then they took Manasseh back to their country. And it says they took him back in shackles and with a ring through his nose. Now, any kind of jewelry seems, piercing seems weird and painful to me. But as I see people with nose rings, I think that's got to not be happy. But evidently it's okay because a lot of people do that. And that's cool, great. But the nose ring he had also had like a chain on it, and they're pulling him by it. Yeah, right. Because listen, Manasseh was
the worst king
you've ever had. So he's a prisoner. And while he's a prisoner, this is what happens. This is blows my mind. I'm going to read this. It's 2 Chronicles 33, verse 12. In his distress, he sought the favor of the Lord. And he humbled himself. We're going to get to that in a minute. The word, the phrase, humbled himself. He humbled himself greatly before the Lord. And when he prayed to the Lord was moved. What happened to him? Well, he saw his sin for the sin it was, and like the prodigal son, right, with the pigs, what happened? Boom! He came to his senses, and he prayed to God. Now, I understand forgiving people for some stuff, and man, I've forgiven some people, and I haven't been forgiven. But this list right here that I just read to you, what's going to happen? How much grace can God have, right? So what did God do? Well, what did the prodigal son's dad do? Here's what happened. God brought Manasseh back to Jerusalem. That's what it says in 2 Chronicles 33. He brought him back to Jerusalem and made him king again. And in my mind, I'm going, what? No way. I mean, no. Grace would have been, instead of burning him at the stake, cutting his head off. That would have been grace, you know. Quick death. That'd be the grace that he deserves. But wait a minute. I said the grace he deserves. And grace and deserve, they don't go together. God brought him back. Yeah, God did that. And so what was Manasseh's response to coming back? Well, he tried to undo all the bad he had done. Right from the time he gets back, he senses that, what? God's forgiven me? God, Yahweh, is God. And his ways are for real. I'm going to go with his ways. And so he began to try and undo much of the wrong that he had done. So again, he was, and this is what God's grace restores. So how did it restore Manasseh? He was a prisoner, and after he received God's grace, he was king again. You see that little thing there? Well, okay. Story number two. Story number two is, look at this, Jesus. Okay? Jesus, the best person that ever lived. So we're going to do it again with Jesus, even though Manasseh we had to work on because we did not know that much about Manasseh, but Jesus, we're still going to say it. So I'm going to say Jesus, you're going to read the slide. Jesus, by far. I mean, there's some good people in this room, but you're not Jesus, right? No, no way. So Jesus, though, what is the deal here, and how did this connects in my brain? Well, I'm going to read to you a passage from Philippians about Jesus, and then when you recognize the part that's similar to Aunt Cindy, she got it ahead of time. But everybody's going to raise their hand when you get to the part that's sort of like Manasseh, okay? So it says, Jesus, who being found in being very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a human being, he humbled himself. Yeah, that's it. Go ahead. He humbled himself. What did Manasseh do when he was in prison? He humbled himself. He humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on the cross. He humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on the cross. Jesus, I understand this idea that, you know, Manasseh needed to humble himself. Why did Jesus need to do that? Well, I think partly is this. I'm going to say this and you chew on it a while. God desires not just a good son. He wanted Jesus to be an obedient son. Now, and sometimes that's a little, asking a little more. Well, in Jesus' case, a lot more. He humbled himself. And so I want to move on to just this idea of what is this to humble yourself? Humble yourself. What does that look like? Well, the word humble yourself and the phrase or the idea of humility are, in this case, are cousins. They're not twins. They're not synonymous. They're not the same exact thing. Humility is more a characteristic or it's a virtue. To humble yourself is an act. It's an act of obedience. And actually, it's a special act of obedience. It's an act of submission. It's where one person submits themselves to another person. And I'm going to humble myself to you. In the Old Testament, the word's used 36 times. The phrase humble yourself is used 36 times. 18 of those times, it's when a foreign country submits or humbles themselves to another country. Or a person humbles themselves to another person. Usually what they're doing is giving up all their dignity. So we're having a war. We're having a little battle. And we're having this battle between Joe and me. We're having a battle. And what we do, when it looks like my side is going to win for sure, what Joe does in giving up, surrendering, he humbles himself. He surrenders. Now, often that looks like taking a knee, handing over my sword. And the person who sometimes they say, instead of you humble yourself, I'm going to humble you. How do I humble you? Well, I disrespect you. In those days, what they do is they cut off the other person's beard. Or they strip them naked and have them walk naked in a parade. Because they're humbling them. I'm giving up every right to myself as a human being. I have no more rights and I'm giving everything I am to you. You are completely in charge of my life and I'm telling you, by humbling myself, you're in charge of me completely. This is what it is to humble yourself. This verb, this virtue, it's something you do. It's sometimes even translated submission or submit. Someone submitted to another person. They humbled himself. So again, Hezekiah, it says in Kings and Chronicles, he humbled himself to God. So did Josiah. So did Manasseh. And so did Jesus. Now, you see, how did Jesus do this? There's one clear place where I think it's really clear where Jesus humbles himself to God. And I think it's exactly what this is talking about in Philippians chapter 2. But it's in Luke 22, and you know it well. Luke 22, Jesus is in the garden. He's praying to God. And these are words of humbling myself, right here. This is it. He says, Father, if you're willing, take this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done. That's what it is to humble yourself. To say, not me, but you. I'm not in charge of me. You're in charge of me. Manasseh humbled himself. Jesus humbled himself. This is what it is to humble yourself. So Jesus did that. Well, let's just take a look at all the people we've mentioned so far who've humbled themselves. The humble self, this is what happens. soon as this person humbles themselves, they get going with some kind of action. I'm calling in the slide it obedient action. Soon as I humble myself to you, I have now become your servant. So I say, tell me what you want me to do. Again, Joe and I have had the war. I lose. I humble myself. I take a knee. I do whatever it is to humble myself in front of you. And the next thing I said, what do you want me to do? Because I belong to you now. Okay? And so that's what happens when you humble yourself. You then become a servant for this other person. And in the case of Hezekiah and Manasseh and Josiah, that other person was God. So I've humbled myself and now I'm God's servant. What am I going to do? Well, I'm going to try and make wrong things right. That's the number one thing everyone who humbles themselves to God began to do. They're going to try and make wrong things right. And you think, okay, I can see that, especially in the case of Manasseh. He had a lot of stuff to make right that he had done wrong. But what about Jesus? Okay? Jesus, what? He was sinless. So what wrong things did he have to make right? Okay, that's a real question. Yeah, look at Steve's pointing in himself. Yeah. He became humbled. He humbled himself to God and went about the business of making wrong things right. And what is the wrong thing? Me. I need him to make my sin right. That's what he did. He took the bullet for me. He humbled himself to God and said, God, I don't want to die like this. Not my will, though. Your will be done. So how do you humble yourself to God? That's the statement you make. You make that statement. And humbling yourself to God every morning is not a bad idea. To say, God, today, I don't know what's going to come, but whatever it is, I want your will to be done. Not mine. Your will. Situation by situation. Relationship by relationship. Your will be done. Not mine. A lot of times in relationships, you have your own ways. You want something a certain way. And a lot of times this happens and you want, you know, selfish, right? Come back to being selfish. And to humble yourself means, no, I'm going to humble myself to God. What do you want in this relationship? How do you want me to live? How do you want me to be? So, he restores. I want to talk about the idea of restoring for just a minute. And first of all, there's another phrase that goes along with the idea of restoring. And it's used several times along with the idea of humbling yourself. In the case of Manasseh, God restored Manasseh to being king. He had lost the privilege of being king. He lost the responsibility of being king. But when he humbled himself, God restored him. Here's what 1 Peter 5 says. This says this several places in the New Testament. It says this, though. Verse 6, 1 Peter 5. Humble yourselves, right, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up. So you're going to humble yourself, and God is going to restore you. It's like you're going to take the knee, and then he's going to reach down and lift you up. You humble yourself, God will lift you up. Humble yourself, God will restore you. God restored, like this happened in the prodigal son story, right? Can you see this, how this is happening? The boy comes to his senses, he comes home and humbles himself, and the dad restores him. He makes him son again. Right? Well, okay, but what about Jesus? Jesus, you know, it's a little bit different, but it's not. So in Jesus' situation, back to Philippians 2, what does he say? He humbled himself, becoming obedient to death, even death on the cross. Therefore, what'd God do? God exalted him to the highest place. He brought him back to that place where he had come from. The sovereign Lord Jesus, the exalted one, the glorified one. He brought him back. And he says, he gave him the name that's above every name, and at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue will confess that Jesus is Lord. So what about this idea, he restores my soul? Well, right off the bat, when I think of restores my soul, I think of 23rd Psalm. Any of you thought of that? Nod, yeah, you did. Yeah, I knew you did. We're the same. So it starts out like this. The Lord's my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me by still waters. He restores my soul. So one of the things that formed my thinking about this psalm was a book by Philip Keller, not Tim Keller, Philip Keller, called A Shepherd's Look at the 23rd Psalm. And when he gets to the part about he restores my soul, he tells the story about how shepherds have to, they do this process and they call it restoring a sheep. And what happens is it's one who's lost. And usually he's wandered off. Maybe not in rebellion, but maybe, you know, because sheep are sometimes stubborn. And so he's kind of looking for his own grass or his own water. And he goes out and he finds his own grass and his own water, but he's away from the rest of the sheep. And what he does, he eats until he's full, this lost sheep. And that lost sheep who eats until he's full then decides, like all of us, when we're eaten and we've eaten well and we're full, what do? Take a nap. Okay, so the sheep takes a nap. So the sheep lays down. And what happens inside a sheep's digestive system, things get out of whack, kind of. And he rolls onto his side and eventually to his back, and the weight shifts in the sheep. And honestly, he can't get up. He's in a position on his side or back. He wakes up, but he can't get up. And if he stays in this position, it's called, the position is called cast down. Interesting. The sheep is cast down. And if a sheep is cast down for long, it will die. No other sheep around. He's alone. And so the shepherd has to notice, hey, one of my sheep is missing. I'm going to go look for that sheep. And when he finds the sheep, he restores the sheep. And here's what's interesting. He can't just lift the sheep up and roll the sheep over and lift him up. He has to gently do it. So evidently the insides of the sheep kind of get restored to normal before he can lift him up. And he has to actually lift the sheep up and hold him for a second till he kind of catches onto his balance. This is it. He restores me. He's looking for me to restore me so I'll be put back to the position that I was designed for. Like, right, where's that orange card? Sometimes I do that to myself. That's why I made it orange. Restored. And how many of us need this? To return someone or something to a former condition, place, or position. See, God just doesn't want to forgive you. He wants to restore you. And restore you to what? To the son or daughter that he created you to be. God's grace includes forgiving you. Even a guy like Manasseh, God can forgive. God did forgive. But not only did he forgive him, he restored him to the place where he was really designed to be. God's grace is given to us on a daily, moment-by-moment basis. It's not just the big events. I need grace because I had a big fall. No. Daily. God's grace is the air we breathe. God's grace, his gifts, are the food we eat. It's joy. It's peace. It's hope. It's love. These are the gifts of God that he's giving to us. And so when we sin and we rebel, and that means I'm demanding my own way. I want to be the king of my life, like Manasseh. Why do I want to do this? Because I can. When we run away, but then come to our senses, what does God do? He runs to us. He dresses us with the robe. He puts a crown on our head. He puts shoes on our feet. He kills a fattened calf for us. He blesses us. God has come. He has sent his son to heal the brokenhearted. He refreshes us. When our plans fail, he reminds us he has a plan for us. And most of all, one of the things he does, he gives us each other. And in the giving us each other, he also restores our soul. I don't know how you feel about this, but when I come here Sunday mornings, I walk in, and sometimes I'm kind of pumped up, ready to go. Sometimes not so much. And the band starts practicing, and then people start coming in, and Dr. Vanderland takes us on a journey. He's restoring my soul as we've come together. And you know, seeing the people in class virtually, he's restoring my soul. God's restoring our soul. His grace is restoring our soul. But for me to receive that gift, I need to humble myself. Humble myself. Submit to God. Submit to God. I'm going to read a little scripture, just a quick scripture after we sing this song. But we're going to sing Lead Me to the Cross. And again, our songs, this is a song of humbling ourselves, giving ourselves to God. And so as you sing this song, let that be the intent of your heart. That today, I'm going to humble myself to God. I'm going to say, God, I'm putting my ways out of my mind, and I'm just going to embrace your ways. I'm going to be an obedient son. And so let's sing this with this in mind. Today, I hope you come embrace these phrases, the idea to humble myself, and then also about being restored. So Isaiah 61 is a verse that Jesus quotes or reads actually in his own hometown synagogue when he goes there to preach. And it's a verse where there's this very beginning, the term me. And who is the me in this verse? Well, most likely, I believe it's God's people. That'd be the Israelites then. It'd be Isaiah the prophet then. Jesus made it himself. But it's also us. So here it is. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, us. Because the Lord has anointed me to do these things. This is what I do when he's led me to the cross. This is what I do when I've humbled myself. I proclaim good news to the poor. And he sent me to bind up, to restore the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners. God sent us on mission as we leave. On mission. And his mission for us is to do what he's done for us. He's restored us through us. He wants to restore other people. Let's do that this week. We'll talk more about grace next week too. All right? Bye.